Phaedra mentioned the question of whether or not A Dangerous Method is a typical Cronenberg film, and that's exactly what I'm going to discuss now today, because I think it's an important question. And in a recent interview, Cronenberg mentioned that when he read Christopher Hampton's play for the first time, he was immediately attracted. And this is not surprising, because the subject, psychoanalysis, appeals to Cronenberg because it allows him to go back to the roots of violence, sexual deviations, perversion, all the subjects he has explored throughout his career in the 70s, 80s, and later on. In addition, the script allows him to go back to the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, to the time when human demons were being explored, seriously explored, for the first time. And obviously he wanted to go back to physicians and scientists who registered the death of God. And Cronenberg is particularly keen to pick on Jung, because Jung is still clinging to his defenses, to his myth, to his religion, and to God, generally, in whatever form. In this sense, A Dangerous Method is a typical Cronenbergian film, because it explores the director's flagship themes, fragmentation, contamination, institutionalization of the body and mind, existential disorientation and confusion, science and technology, and the doomed attempts to resolve the Cartesian split, the body-mind gap. The result is rather perplexing. Jung would have had difficulty recognizing himself in this rather Freudian interpretation. In a recent interview with Film Quarterly, Cronenberg said, quote, "I suppose one of the reasons that I would prefer Freud to Jung is that I think that Freud insisted on the reality of the human body at a time when the body was covered up by many stiff layers of clothing. Freud was saying, no, all of these orifices and fluids and things are of actual significance and importance to the human psyche, whether we like it or not. Meanwhile, Jung wanted to sort of flee the body and become a spiritual leader, which I think is what happened. He became more like a religious leader than a physician, in my opinion." End of quote. And that's what Cronenberg does. He brings Jung back in this film to the question of the body. He drags him back to Freud. He rubs his nose in sex, the instincts, fluids, physicality. He makes him witness and accept the dark, uncontrollable, unpredictable side of human sexuality. Sabina Spielrein and Otto Gross become his accomplices in this elaborate torture of the spiritual man who dares to think that sex is not everything and that there is life outside the narrow cage of the body. And obviously, most Cronenberg's protagonists end up being tortured, and that's just how he prefers to torture Jung. Not true. The second phase of the torture he invents for Jung is even worse. Leaving him face to face with the monsters, Cronenberg takes away his spirituality. Religion, Cronenberg implies in most of his interviews, is a toy for the deluded, a shield against existential emptiness, a fragile bridge across the void. It is something cowards use in order to avoid the difficulty of choice and responsibility of individual decisions. It is all too easy to attain personal wholeness with myth, to heal the broken psyche of modern man with the promise of God in whatever form, to water the wasteland of modern psyche with fables. Cronenberg remains skeptical of such methods. His aesthetics calls for a broken psyche, disjointed, cut into pieces, mutilated, torn, tortured, or murdered in a snuff film. The images of disintegration he mercilessly creates throughout his career, the repugnant bodily transformations in The Fly, you've probably seen this one, the gynecological nightmare of Dead Ringers, the sexual perversions of Crash, the mindless, highly contagious violence in Videodrome, all go back to the wasteland of Western soul. Instead of healing the split, the Cartesian schism, he widens it with his surgical instruments and shows its ugly contents, and he likes the idea of surgical instruments being used on human body. In one of his films, The Videodrome, the protagonist, Max Wren, has a vagina on his stomach. which sometimes opens and then closes and becomes a scar. That's a disgusting image. And he keeps putting his hand, you know, inside this vagina and taking things out and putting things back in. And that's the ugly image of the unconscious that Cronenberg likes very much. The unconscious, he thinks, is a wound. It never heals. It's always there, and it's ugly. The modern man, Cronenberg implies, is not in search of a soul. There's no such thing as a soul in the first place. There's only the body and our poor, tortured free will exhausted by making constant moral choices in the absence of a higher being. And the darker aspect of this position is echoed by Otto Gross in the film when he says, our job is to make our patients capable of freedom. Whatever happens to them, doesn't matter. One of them committed suicide. And the lighter aspect is recalled by Sabina when she says to Jung, I want to be a doctor because I want to give freedom to the people. I want to give freedom to my patients like you did to me. And in this position, Cronenberg follows his hero, the trailblazer, the supreme master of disintegration caused by too much freedom, William Burroughs, and especially his controversial novel, The Naked Lunch. Cronenberg is also a big fan of Samuel Beckett, existentialist as well, and The Theatre of the Absurd. Cronenberg says in one of the interviews, quote, the phrase biological horror, often attached to my work, really refers to the fact that my films are very body conscious. They're very conscious of physical existence as a living organism, rather than other horror films or science fiction films, which are very technologically oriented or concerned with the supernatural, and in this sense are very disembodied. I've never been religious in the sense that I felt there was a God, that there was an external structure, universal and cosmic, that was imposed on human beings. I always really did feel, at first not consciously and then quite consciously, that we have created our own universe. Therefore, what is wrong with it also comes from us. It isn't to say that we make all the rules, just that my worldview is human-centered as opposed to being centered outside humanity. I think that this naturally leads you to the feeling that if you are dealing with horror, it must also be human-centered. It comes from within man. End of quote. Cronenberg also is also keen to show the limitations we have to endure because we have a body. Quote, I'm attached to the notion that I'm free and my will determines my own life. End of quote. A Dangerous Method confirms his idea that human beings, quote, carry the seeds of their own destruction with them always and that they can erupt at any time because there is no defense against it. There is no escape from it, end of quote. And obviously, you remember Keira Knightley's character says in the film, I'm violent and filthy and corrupt. I must never get out of here. The seeds of destruction. The next phase of torture involves the question of class. A traditional middle-class man who had a perfect childhood, Cronenberg is keen to challenge and dismiss throughout his career, what he sees as the sterility and cleanliness of middle-classlessness. He becomes the trickster, undressing the body and showing all the unsightly scars to his shocked middle-class audience. He dissects, he uncovers, he crosses all possible boundaries of good taste and moral behavior. He says that in films like Shivers, which is about parasites attacking people, he identifies with the parasites because they infect nice middle-class people and throw them into the world of completely new, ugly, and nasty experiences, but he also thinks these are very sexy experiences because he's a Freudian. Death and sex come from the same root. The director often uses the metaphor of infection, diseases, parasites, to show the artificiality of middle-class civilizedness and his desire to shove all the unpleasant and uncomfortable aspects of the body under the carpet. And contamination isn't, in his film, contamination isn't always physical. In Eastern Promises, it's Russian mafia that infiltrates the West, Western society. All the while, he thinks flesh will always break free. Flesh cannot be controlled by systems, including the code of medical conduct. And naturally, Cronenberg identifies Jung as a typical bourgeois man trapped in a typical asexual bourgeois marriage, and therefore he should be challenged. Cronenberg completes his torture by infecting Jung with the demons of sadomasochism, sexual anarchism, and madness, courtesy of highly contagious transmitters such as Sabina and Otto Gross. Like a cruel scientific experimenter out of his own horror films, he strips Jung of his defences and watches him try and find the way out of the maze of existential emptiness and seemingly unsolvable moral dilemmas. So how does Jung bear the torture invented for him by Cronenberg? I would say, given the deplorable circumstances in which he finds himself, Jung fares relatively well. He is listless but heroic, like a sort of Harry Potter of psychoanalysis. Struggling with the monster crawling out of the depths of his and his own patient's unconscious. Normally, these contents are to be released in framed and controlled circumstances, such as association tests, and contained within stringent professional boundaries to minimize the consequences. But eventually, the demons he extracts from the depths and dissects stage a Frankenstein-esque revolt and run away. The dangerous method of the title is a kind of dark portal through which they escape. Cronenberg believes in the independence of flesh, quote, "I don't think that the flesh is necessarily treacherous, evil, bad. It is independent. The idea of independence is the key. I notice that my characters talk about the flesh undergoing revolution at times," end of quote. The only way to survive in the monstrous, godless, unpredictable, vast sea full of monsters of the deep is to build a boat. The fragile sea vessel is the key metaphor for defining Jung's character early in the film. Emma obviously gives him a boat. And the film abounds in images of lakes and oceans and water, romantic trips with Sabina across the lake, Lake Zurich, and trips with Freud, again, Lake Zurich, and the journey to the United States as well. Jung, Cronenberg is trying to say, is like a vessel, individuating against his passive will, being swayed by forces bigger than himself, small yet resilient, and bravely peering into the unfathomable depths, which is a very existentialist image. And when he crosses the lake, it's like he crosses the Hades and goes back. That's the unconscious. Jung, the hero, in his brave opening of the unconscious dam, gets inevitably contaminated. Or, as Burroughs says in Naked Lunch, monsters have the habit of escaping with ominous snarls and mutterings. Jung loses control, he has sex with a client, he is persuaded by the client to engage in certain sexual practices, and finally, the protagonist reaches the verge of his human endurance and altogether starts losing his mind. The film ends with him being mentally unwell and looking into the distance with the sound of water lapping on the background, again the unconscious, the depth. This scene renders the sense of chaos and disorientation and confusion in the face of an apparently meaningless and absurd world. With this scene, Cronenberg creates a protagonist whose attempts to deal with the darkness without getting contaminated are as heroic as they are unavailing. Cronenberg wants to see him suffer because to be desperate, because this would prove the director's major ideas about the all-powerlessness or powerfulness of flesh in the godless world, the tragic self-reliance, and the necessity for moral choice. The final scene of the film can be described using Cronenberg's own words, quote, "We are condemned to be free. We have to continue to try and wrest control from the world, from the universe, from reality, even though it might be hopeless." Cronenberg does not believe in rebirth. He's not a Jungian, he's Freudian. And obviously he would not be interested in making a film about what happens next after this crisis, because he wants his crisis. He doesn't want the rebirth, and he doesn't want the healing. He doesn't want reparation. He prefers the wounds to remain open, because his best monsters come out of them.